Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way. And on today's show, we're talking millionaire.
I was going to make a milli reference. Does that just date me at this point? Even though that song's like 2 years old. You know what? It's all too much mental. I'm not even going to think about it right now. Our first course, debt-free, a four-week starter kit, is live and available. You can visit paypal.co/debt to learn more and purchase the course.
Get on it.
Yeah, get on it, because the low introductory rate of $20, which we will give you a slight heads up for when we raise it, but it will be going up, narrator, he said ominously.
So on today's show, we're talking with Tony Bradshaw. Tony is the author of The Millionaire Choice, which focuses on inspiring and equipping millennials and beyond to become millionaires. We talk about his experience with money growing up, the power of choice, and a lot more. And per usual, we hope you enjoy. I don't know why I said it that way, but enjoy. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rich.
So tell the good people, the PNB family, a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are and all that other good stuff.
Man, I grew up in a low-income family here in Nashville, Tennessee. My dad still lives in the same house I grew up in, so he's been there about 47 years. Kind of following in the same footsteps my parents did. They didn't really learn how to manage money growing up, and I found myself in my 20s doing the same thing, even though I'd gotten a nice education, gotten a college education. Managed to get through my college days without any debt, which was nice, but immediately after getting out of there, picked up a credit card. And then started picking up some credit card debt, not a whole lot, you know, just a little. And then financed a car, and then got my first W-2 out of college, man. And I had made $39,000. And I had never seen so much money in my life. And I'm just like, what in the world? Like 39 grand. I think the most I'd ever made before that might have been $5,000 or $6,000 in a year. And it blew my mind, because I probably had about $500 in the checking account. And I knew I had about $16,000 in debt. I was living at home in a studio bedroom apartment with my parents, paying about $200 a month in rent, which, you know, covers food basically. And that was it. I just couldn't believe that I had blown through that much cash. And so I knew that that wasn't a good formula for life. And so I just started learning everything I could about money. Went to Books A Million, local bookstore, you know, the bookstore chain here across the country, and just started learning everything I could about money. And about 90 days after that, I really realized money's really just a math problem. And if you do the right math and you do the right things with your money, make the right choices, you know, you can become a millionaire. It's not as difficult as people might think. You just have to make the right choices and do the right things. And so I set out with the goal to become a millionaire by the time I was age 40. And I was able to hit it.
I have a potentially contentious follow-up question, depending where you fall on this particular lightning rod. But I was a little shocked to hear that it sounds like you were in the backyard of the grandfather of personal finance. His shadow might have literally loomed over you one day, this being Dave Ramsey. Uh-huh. So I was surprised to hear that you could exist in Nashville and have money problems. So, I mean, did that influence you in any way, or did his shadow not cross your path? How's that work?
It's actually a really funny story. So at 25, you know, I grew up in a lower income family, so we didn't get a lot of exposure to, you know, mentors and things like that. My parents were just making mistakes, just going to work, just blue collar people doing the work deal. There were some times my mom was working, you know, 100 hours a week trying to pay bills. My dad, you know, some years he would work, but he was a general contractor kind of guy, did carpentry work, and he might make $7,000 in a year. And so it was just not a good thing. But back then, Dave Ramsey, I think he actually started in 1992. And I didn't really find out about him until 1998 was the first time I actually saw him and met him. And I still didn't know who he was. And it was when we were going through a premarital class at my church. My wife and I were in a premarital class, and the couple that was leading the class were friends with Dave and asked him to come in and teach one lesson on personal finance. And I still remember him covering the debt snowball and how to get out of debt and pay out, you know, get rid of debt, and debt was bad. And I raised my hand. He said, which debt do you pay off first? I raised my hand and said the smallest one. And he goes, have you been reading my material? And I said, no, it just makes sense, you know, because it's easy to get the first one paid off. And so that was my first interaction and ever meeting Dave or knowing who Dave was. And then actually 3 years later in 2001, I actually went to work for him. And that's I remember sitting at the interview going to work for him. And I'm like, that's the guy that taught my personal finance thing. Because I didn't know who he was or I didn't know his material. It just we were very aligned financially, philosophically, and just from, you know, learning personal finance and what he was teaching. And he's teaching good stuff.
So, of course, you went to work there. You got the interview. You nailed it. What made you interested in wanting to work in that space?
You know, I think it was, for me, the internet was a real big pull for me. So I was not as interested in personal finance, the space in general. I was more interested in the internet because it had become, it was really starting to become a thing. And I really loved the way that you could push and pull data over the internet. And this was, you know, circa 2001. So Bill Gates had just figured out that the internet was a big deal. And so that was my draw. It was really around, not around personal finance as much, even though I was on track, but this was a company, Dave's company was a company that I could align with and believe in. And so that made it fun, but it was really more about the internet and reaching people because I realized how many people you could actually reach with the power of the internet. And that was very exciting to me.
Gotcha. So you mentioned coming from meager means, but you ultimately graduated college debt-free. So how did that work?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I wasn't very good with my money in college. I worked, you know, when I was home for summers, but I spent most of everything I made. And my parents were, because they had had such a rough childhood upbringing, both come from broken homes, broken families, very little family support. They overcompensated with me and my sister. I have one sibling. And so they empowered me to be able to go to school. So I did get a small scholarship, paid for about half the college when I was there. And the school I went to, it was about $5,000 for room, board, and tuition. So it was a really good rate. Yeah. And so I was able to cover half of it through scholarship. And then the rest of it, my parents helped pick up. And then I paid some of it myself too as well and worked through it. But we were just able to, you know, stay on top of it, not get behind, just manage our money well enough to get out of there without a lot of debt. Unfortunately, today, as you guys mentioned on your show a couple of weeks ago, student loans and college education in general has just ballooned up. I believe you said 300% in like 30 years or something like that. It's just astronomical. And so I think I was in there in college before that happened. And so beat the curve a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say $5,000, you know, having to pay that for room and board and half of it being covered by scholarship. Yeah, that's definitely not how much it would cost today. It probably would definitely be 300, 400 times that maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I will say this. The school I went to, their whole mission, and it is a Christian school, but their whole mission was to provide affordable Christian education, you know, quality, affordable Christian education. So they actually had a business that supplemented the school. So I got a flyer not too long ago, and the room, board, and tuition today, I think it's about $7,000 at that same school. And it's because they're supplementing it, trying to give the kids an affordable education instead of trying to racking up the debt. And so I just commend them for sticking with that mission.
Gotcha. And so I think for better or worse, we all pick up habits from our parents, regardless of the situation that we grew up in. So what are some of the financial habits, whether good or bad, that you think that you picked up as a result of the way that you grew up?
I guess covering the bad ones first would be a good... Man, I was just blowing money like everything on everything. I figured I was going to get married one day, right? Young man, single guy. I'm like, I'm going to get married one day. So when I bought my first new car, which I don't recommend buying new cars, especially on debt, but I've bought one in my lifetime. It was 1994 SL2 Saturn. And I believe it was about $14,000. But I bought a four-door because I'm like, I'm going to have kids one day, man. I'm going to stick kids in the backseat of this thing. I might as well plan ahead. And I don't know if most 25-year-old men think that way, but I do.
No, they don't.
And so that was my first big debt, and it was the only time. It's actually the only new car I've ever purchased and the only one I've ever financed. And so that was a long time ago. I paid that off. Once I had my financial wake-up call, I actually paid the thing off in 3 years. So, you know, it was a five-year note, but I paid it off in 3 years and never had a car debt since. The other thing I think I did that was bad was obviously, you know, using credit card debt. I needed a computer because you know, the computer age was coming around, and I financed a $2,000 computer to get going with my engineering career. I figured I needed to learn it the first day on the job. I didn't know what I was doing with the computer, so I needed to invest in that. And it was a good investment, but it was still debt. You know, it would have been better to figure out how to save up and get that done without debt. But those are kind of the big ones. And then, you know, as a young man, again, preparing for marriage, I'm like, well, my wife's probably going to have furniture. So I'm going to stick with the electronics. And so I pumped thousands of dollars into electronics, the stereo, the TV, the speakers. I had $1,000 speakers, $500, you know, rear speakers, surround sound. You know, I just like that was it. And so when we got married, and I was right, she had the furniture and I had the electronics. So we were pretty set.
That sounds very man.
I actually admire your courage. That's actually why I went with the four-door. I went with the four-door Charger instead of the two-door Challenger. That was my financially responsible decision.
And that was a good decision, man.
That's what I tell them. So my girlfriend now, who thinks this is comical, but we don't have any kids yet, but she's like, you're going to put kids in that back seat? Because you can barely fit a vertically challenged person. I'm not sure what the appropriate PC term is. But one of my questions for you, I think people gravely underestimate this, so perhaps you've done the math on it. Why are you kind of now either against or do you preach against the practice of buying a new vehicle? Can you kind of talk about those implications?
The big thing is, you know, when you learn about money, you still have to start thinking about money in terms of the future, not where you're at today. And that's where the trap is today, is there, the system, the way money's done, consumerism, the television, all the commercials we watch, they get you trapped in this mindset of today, today, today. Get this today. Don't miss this deal. And it's a trap. And so every dollar you spend today, depending on what your age is, if you invest that or put it into something that's going to grow, what you call, you know, like an appreciating asset, that's a technical term, but, you know, things that are going to go up in value, then your money is going to return for you in the future and not go down in value. New cars, when you buy a new car, you lose 27%. I think it's 25% of your money as soon as you drive it off the car lot.
I didn't know it was that high.
So that means if you, it's huge, man. And there's some stats out there and some great infographics on it. But, and it of course depends on which car you buy, right? Like if you buy a Jeep, I mean, Jeeps, it's crazy how much that value they retain once they get older. But, you know, just your standard run-of-the-mill car is just going to drop like a, you know, a ton of bricks to the point where after 5 years, you've got about 25, 27% of your value left in the car. Again, depending on what kind of car you buy. Where are you going to put 30 grand and at the end of 5 years, you're going to have 25% of that money left? That's a loss in value. But as contrast, if you go, hey, I can buy a used car, and if you look at the time frame and the amount of money you spend in it, you could actually buy used car after used car after used car for the same money that you would have bought that new car for and end up having a newer car at the end of the trip, you know? But the big reason is to go, hey, if I take that money or figure out a way to do it, a portion of that money and invest it, then that money is going to double roughly every 7 years, depending on percentages and what you invest in, of course, and depending on what the market's doing. But you can use that as a rule of thumb to go, hey, if I'm a 30-year-old guy, and, you know, I'm retiring at 65. Let's just use that number. You've got, 35 years, 7 years, you've got five doubling cycles in there. So you can say, hey, if I don't buy this new car, then my money roughly is going to double. Whatever money I can get into an investment is going to double about every 7 years. And so by the time you double that, you go, it's five times. It's at least five times that cash. And so that's, you know, that's how you build wealth, is you take that money and you make a different decision in the moment. And I know for some people that doesn't work because you have like an immediate need or there's an immediate issue. And so you have to work around that. But my advice would be, you know, to get out of the new car syndrome as soon as possible. I haven't had a new car. I've only had one new one. And we bought, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old cars. But after we bought that first new car, I drove that thing for 15 years. And I decided to get rid of it when I pulled away from the red light and I looked in the rearview mirror and there was a cloud of smoke behind me. And I'm like, it's probably time to get rid of it. I've got a six-figure salary. I need to invest in something else. And that was, you know, I drove it, but, you know, $14,000 car, 14, 15 years, I paid about $1,000 a year for that car, plus, you know, some fixes that I had to do to it, but I got my value out of it. And that's really what you're looking for. Whether you buy new or used, you need to get as much value out of that money that you spend on that car as you can.
Yeah, I'm all about the used car life. And I think for me, I realized it was time to give up Ultima Jones, as I called it. When I was driving down the highway, the car was shaking and I saw people speeding to get away from me. in real life. And I was like, this probably is not safe. Like, I got to push the brake pad like all the way down to the floor of the car to be able to slow down. I probably need to move on to a new vehicle. And I plan to go used for years to come, unless maybe I do get to the millionaire status and I decide that I want to ball out, or unless, you know, I win a new car, which is a completely different thing. But taking a quick step back, you mentioned that you had this financial wake up moment. So what was the situation before you had your financial wake up call? And when did you realize things needed to be different?
Yeah, I think it was, I thought I was doing pretty well because I was making, you know, my mom had been working, you know, she's 20 years older than me, and I knew about what she was making. So I thought I was doing pretty well because I was making all this money, more than my mom was making at the time. So I felt like I had arrived a little bit arrogance going on, I think, a little comfortability. But looking at how much debt I had and how little money I had in the bank, it just didn't make sense to me. And I went to school for engineering, so I'm like, I'm pretty good with math, you know. I should know what I'm doing with my math. And so I just studied the financial world after that and went, you know what? Money's really just a math problem. And if you do the right math, you can, you know, figure this thing out, and you can, you know, the formula works. It's like math is predictable. Money is very predictable if you make the right choices with it, you know. And regardless of if you don't have, you know, a job that pays you a lot or a job that does pay you a lot, you can still arrive at the same place. Everybody, I think, has the opportunity, although it's somewhat more difficult for some people based on their life and cultural situations. But I've met enough people now where I'm like, you know what? I met a guy from Compton. He was the only white guy living in an African-American Hispanic community. And somehow he became a millionaire by the time he was 30. And so I did it by 40. I thought I was doing pretty well, but he grew up in a much worse like environment, lower income poverty level. He said his dad still lives in that area because he has no ambition. Wow. And so this young guy had ambition, and he's like, you know, by the time I was 18, I'm like, I'm gonna be a millionaire. And he did it. He was able to do it. So that's why I believe anybody can do it, because you find it. Once you start finding the stories, you start finding the people and the circumstances that they lived in. And so it really starts to erase the excuses that we all make on why we can't get ahead. You know, I had those, I could have kept making those excuses just like, you know, anybody does, but I just chose to make a different choice in life, you know, whether that was with money or job. But yeah, I hope that answers your question. I think I might've drifted a little bit there. Yeah, the financial wake-up call, I think, is the first step, is just kind of realizing what situation you're in, which for me was, where'd all that money go that I've never even seen it before? And that's not good for me. And I don't want to repeat that. You know, that's a mistake I don't want to repeat. That's what I would call my financial awakening. And I think everyone has to have that before they can, you know, jump into the place where they go, they have a vision for their future, you know? And I think that's what a lot of us lack, is the ability to create a vision of a better future. You have to reconcile with where you're at first and go, I don't want to be here anymore. Let me go somewhere else. And then what is that other place that I want to go to? And then take those steps towards that.
And so how much debt did you have at the time?
At that time, I had about 16 grand. It was about $2,000 in credit cards, you know, 13, 14 in car note. So right around those numbers. So not a tremendous amount of debt. But I was pretty proud of the fact that within 18 months of having that financial awakening, I did something a little bit different. A lot of people tell you to just pay off your debt first. I actually had enough money to where I said, you know what, I'm going to get the debt out of the way, but I'm also going to go ahead and start investing. And so I started putting money into investments immediately, both mutual funds and stock market. And so I was trading tech stocks at that point, is where I began. And not with a lot of money, because I didn't have a lot, but enough. And so within about 18 months, I was able to get all my debt paid off and have about $18,000 in stocks and mutual funds. And so that was a big win for a young guy at 25, 26 by that time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so you did something there, because I've heard various opinions on whether you should even be thinking about investing if you have debt. You know, there are folks who say you need to pay off your debt in full first before you even think about investing, or at least have it below a certain level. So how did you think about and decide, you know, I'm going to do both of these things at the same time?
My answer would be, I think it comes down to disposable income, like how much excess income you have. If you've got a big house payment, your situation's a little bit different. If you have a lot of different debt payments coming in, I think your situation is going to be a little different. At that point, I think I had I had the car and probably maybe two credit cards. So I didn't have like 10 different debts I was paying on at once. I only had a small amount of debts to pay on. So I was able to, you know, quickly knock those out and then get to the car payment and accelerate it. It's, you know, it's fun when you're making three or four car payments a month because you have excess income instead of just a single car payment, which, you know, which strings it out for longer. And then the investment part of it, I just had enough to be able to get going. So I wanted to go ahead and get started immediately with that. And, you know, with the mutual funds, because that's where you're going to build your wealth. And so you want to, I believe you want to get started as soon as possible, but not everybody has the luxury of having excess income. So they have to start with wherever they're at in that moment. And for some people, the biggest pain point is obviously debt because they're overwhelmed with it. It's, you don't even realize how much debt affects you emotionally or physically, you know, from a health standpoint or relationship wise in your house with your kids, with your parents, your family. It's just, there's so much stress there and we just get so used to living with it that it just becomes part of your life, you know, almost like a pet. You just kind of keep it around. But man, when you get out of debt and you're totally done with it, it's a different world. It really is.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think about my parents and I won't say that they were financially irresponsible, but I was used to them carrying a credit card balance and just paying the minimum every month. So that was very normal to me. Versus how when I got into, what was it, $20,000 of debt, it was pretty stressful. And there was a point of time where I'm just like, this is what you do. You have debt, you keep paying it off. But it got to a point where I started worrying and saying to myself, you know what? Like, what if something happens to my job? What if something else goes wrong? I could very quickly find myself in a situation where after a couple of months, I'm going to be in some really dire straits. So I made a commitment to become debt free and actually achieve that. But that stress is very real.
Yeah, for sure. When I got married, my wife had actually been, she knew more about Dave Ramsey than I did. So she had been through his class. And so we were mentally kind of on the same page, although she was managing her money a little bit differently. I'm a little bit more rigid with the vision, you know, hey, this is where we're going to go. But we haven't had a credit card since, oh gosh, I think we tore them all up like in the 1990s, like late 90s. Wow. Yeah. And then I found one. I was going through some files and found a Capital One card or something hiding in a folder. I thought I'd gotten rid of it. It didn't have a balance on it, but I'm like, what are you doing here? And we, you know, cut that thing up, got rid of it. Yeah, so we haven't had any consumer debt, whether car or credit card, since, I think we paid our last one off and would have been '02. I guess the last bit of our debt was paid off in '02. I did a couple stupid things after I got married. And even though I was an anti-debt guy, I wanted to impress my wife and I got suckered in by a vacuum cleaner salesman.
Oh, that's like the Cutco of the years.
I came home from work. Go ahead. What are you going to say? You're going to rub it in, R2.
Did you buy that Kirby thing that's about the size of a small?
Yes, I knew it. my mom and dad had one. I was growing up and I'm like, this thing lived 30 years. I remember using it as a kid. And then so I came home from work one day and there was this awesome vacuum cleaner salesman. And I just listened to him. He's talking about how I could, you know, scrub your furniture and clean your gutters and like just all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm newly married. I need to impress my wife. This is an awesome vacuum cleaner. And my mom and dad had one. Let's do it. And I financed that thing. I'm like, what am I doing? Yeah, I think it was like $1,500. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Thinking back now, I'm like, how stupid was I? And here's the kicker. That's an insult to injury. You ready for this?
Go for it.
We had a small house, 1,000 square foot. That was it. Just a small house, 2-bedroom. And we had a throw rug in the living room. That was the only bit of carpet we had, just a throw rug in the living room. It was probably like 5 feet wide by 7 feet long. Like that's all the carpet we had. And I'm like, it was one of the dumbest decisions anybody could ever make. And then the other thing that we did was a meat service guy came by and my wife actually wanted that one. So she wanted a meat service. And of course they're going to sell you the freezer to keep the meat in because it has to be industrial grade freezer. And so we financed that thing. Otherwise, we would have probably been out of debt in 2001. So I had to pay extra, you know, $3,000 in what Dave calls stupid tax. So that was my bad stupid tax right there.
We're taking a quick break from our chat with Tony to tell you about today's sponsors. Travel season is upon us, and we know how stressful airports can be. Long lines and worry of seeing your flight take off while one hand is pressed against the glass and the other has the Arthur clenched fist. Income's Clear, one of my favorite services when I'm trying to touch the sky. Clear helps me get through airport security with the tap of my fingers so I can get to that gate faster and with less angst. With Clear, I am the ID. No need for a physical card. All I need are these eyes and these fingertips. You can create your account before going to the airport, and one of their helpful ambassadors will assist you in completing the process when you get there. Beyond airports, Clear can help you get in the stadiums faster so you can get to your seat and sigh in relief. And if you've got a family, up to 3 family members can be added at a discounted rate, and kids under 18 are free when traveling with you. Right now, PNB listeners can get their first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/paychecks and use code paychecks. That's clearme.com/paychecks, promo code paychecks for your free 2 months of Clear. Everyone loves payday, but loving a payroll provider, that's not exactly what's hot in these streets. Unless, of course, we're talking about Gusto, which makes payroll, taxes, and HR easier for small businesses. It'll automatically pay and file federal, state, and local taxes, so you don't have to worry about it. And it's easy to add on health benefits and 401k, things you know are important, but don't have the time or know-how to do with the utmost speed. Also, if you have a difficult work situation, they have certified HR professionals on staff to help you navigate the murky waters across all 50 states. And trust me, you're gonna have to deal with some things. PNB family get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. To learn more and sign up, go to gusto.com/paychecks today. Again, that's gusto.com/paychecks, G-U-S-T-O. And if you're not running a business, this is a good chance to shine by recommending a dope solution. And now, back to the show.
So I want to say a couple things here. We had a Kirby vacuum as well. That's why I was able to guess that. Now, mind you, for those who are unfamiliar, this thing is like the size of a small Volkswagen Beetle. I think it has a Volkswagen Beetle engine inside of it. So, I mean, it can vacuum anything, probably the Sahara Desert, without any trouble. It's actually a very reliable vacuum. It's about 150 pounds. You know, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Kirby vacuum. So I can't even say anything negative about it, because that thing, we probably still have it at the house. That thing's probably older than me. Like, it's pretty well built. I don't know who builds it. I don't even know if they still exist. But any that are still in existence were probably, like you said, it's older than the 90s, and they probably work great. So, I mean, for whatever it costs, that Volkswagen Beetle vacuum is worth it. But I also want to tell people, I think you spoke a little bit about the car loan, and you've talked a little bit about these debts. But I think, and maybe you can speak to this, and if not, I can cite a few things that we wrote about on the website, that people underestimate when they start tackling the principal. So you said you were making multiple car payments, and I think most people are going to start thinking, okay, that's just more money out of my pocket. That's why I like to put a debt calculator in front of people, because they don't realize how quickly they'll get out of debt. Do you have any example of that? Like, if I had just paid the minimum, I'd have been in debt this long, but because I multiplied my payments, it was this short.
Yeah, I think the best one that got me, the car, of course, but cars today, I think the average car payment starts at $35,000 as the car on a 7-year note. And I believe it's around a $500 a month car payment. I forget what the exact numbers are. My car payment at that time was about $310. So when I talk about 3 times a payment, you're talking about like $900 a month or something. But yeah, so every depending on what your interest rate is, I mean, you're just saving money out of your pocket. You're taking money that would normally go to the bank, especially at the end, and you're just putting it back into your own pocket. So, accelerating debt payoff is huge. But it really comes into play on longer term debts, especially like a house. And so our first house we bought, we only paid $62,500 for it, 1,000 square feet.
Man.
Yeah, we got a great deal. $500 a month house payment. Get that. And that was after my wife convinced me not to buy a trailer. We were actually looking into getting a trailer, and she didn't want to do that. And we ended up finding a house that was even more affordable than getting a trailer, because I was dead set on not going into debt. I wanted to keep as much money in my pocket as possible. But what shocked me was, because at that time, I'm still young and I haven't become a master of finance yet. I had just learned a few tricks. And the tricks were, get out of debt. Debt's your enemy. Like, debt is your enemy. And the other trick was invest lots and lots of money. And if you just do those two things, you're going to be in pretty good shape. So very simple rules of thumb. But as I got older, I started to learn more about real estate and, of course, how it's set up. So like, we did a 30-year house payment, And then when we sold our house after about, I think it was about 6 years in, I realized how much money I had paid on this house. You know, I had paid a lot of money into this house, but the equity that I got out of the house was almost zero. You know, it just on a 30-year loan. And then now, after writing my book that came out in November and studying it, helping people understand it, a lot of people make that same mistake. And so the average family moves and trades houses every 7 years. Well, what they do every time they do that, they get another 30-year loan because they're going, I can afford this, that payment mentality of going, if I can afford it, I can buy it. And that's a bad mentality. And so what they do is they trade up houses every 7 years and they just carry all the stuff, but they're not building equity in their home because you don't really build that much equity the first 7 years you're in the home. Then you reset the loan and you just keep carrying it out. And that's why you have a lot of people today. It's really sad when you look at the debt numbers, but people that are in their 60s when they should be retiring and they're still carrying a house payment. And that house payment should have been paid off probably in their 40s and at the very latest in their 50s. And so those are just the biggest things for me. And so when we got into the house, our second two houses, we just started accelerating payments like crazy. We paid our second house off within about 6 years, 6.5 years, I think. And then the house we're in now, when we moved into it, I didn't want a debt, but it was more expensive. So I had to carry some debt on it for a while. And then we were able to pay it off within 3 or 4 years.
And so equity, for those who haven't thought about buying a home, that whole concept is new to them, but they know it's something that they may need to do or want to do down the road. What is equity?
Equity is when you buy something like a house, you're going to finance a certain percentage of it. So like on my first house, I think I put 5% down or 10% down on it. So that means I financed 90% of the house. So I had 10% equity in the house, or let's use simpler numbers. It was roughly a $60,000 house. I had $6,000 of equity in the house. And then I had financed roughly, $55,000 or so. And so I was paying the bank interest on $55,000 for 7 years before we moved. But all of that money was pretty much interest because of the way the loans are calculated and the way the pay downs are done. And so because of that, I didn't build any equity or money back into my own pocket. All the money I paid went to the bank for the most part. And like 80, 90% of it went to the bank. Only like 10, 15% of it went back into my own pocket.
Gotcha.
And so that's why you want to be more aware of how the payment systems work on the things that you're buying, especially a larger purchase like a house, but even a smaller purchase like a car too, as well, because of the way, you know, in a car, you're worried about the value of the car going down, whereas the value of a house is actually going up over the time that you own it.
And give some additional context. I appreciate that answer, by the way. You should be able to get this from your bank, but I'm sure it's painful and difficult. So if you have Microsoft Office, I'm sure Google Sheets has an equivalent. They have an Excel amortization schedule where you can literally plug that in. So you can plug in your home loan to see how much. And we had Paula Pant, I believe it was, on the show because she kind of specializes in real estate. I'll get that in the show notes for that episode. And she talked about, I think it was the first 9 years goes just to interest payments. And I don't think people are thinking like that. So like you said, okay, I'm going to sell this home in 7 years. They don't realize they haven't made any dent in the actual price of the home in the first 7 to 9 years. So that I think that's something that people might want to, if they want to see how that money is or is not helping them, there's some tools out there that's available. Like I just use Excel because it's free. Well, for me, because I had it.
Yeah. And that's great. Yeah. The more you understand about it, the better off you are. And you were talking about like how you paying that extra kind of knocks off a little bit. And I would have to go run the numbers. But if you paid like just an extra payment a year, it ends up lowering your house like from a 30-year loan to like, I'm pretty sure it's like less than 20 years, just paying an extra payment a year. And especially in the first year, instead of waiting until the later years to do that. So the more money you put in early, the more it saves you long term. And I like the idea of personally people getting like really serious about their payments and going, hey, what can I do to pay this thing off in like 10 or 15 years? Like, what would my life look like if I didn't have a house payment in 10 or 15 years? And, you know, the security that it brings to your family is huge. Now, I will say this. If you have extra money and you're going to pay it towards your house, that is a great thing to do if you're buying a house. If you have extra money and you want to stick it into an investment, that is financially, mathematically, that is an even better thing to do, but it carries more risk with it. Spending that extra money is the worst thing to do. And so if you're trying to build finance, so you say, hey, I have extra $500 this month. Should I invest it? Should I stick it towards my house, or should I go spend it? You really have three choices. What are you going to do with it? And, obviously the first two, I think, are the best. The third one is the worst.
And so you've got a book out there. You mentioned that you're now a published author, The Millionaire Choice. And so I'm going to ask you to give an overview of the book for people. But sometimes when I see the word choice, I realize that that can be a contentious topic because we don't choose how we grow up. We don't choose the circumstances that we're in early on. And a lot of time, at least for me, when I hear people talk about how everything is a choice, they're often coming from a background that affords them some level of privilege. So how did you think about choice, or how do you think about choice in the context of this book?
Yeah, so for me, it was really a choice between continuing what my parents had done and my grandmother had done, and just name all the people in my family. I don't have cousins that are wealthy. I don't have uncles that are wealthy. I don't have any, nobody's wealthy. And so for me, it was making a choice between I can continue doing what all these other family members have done for generations, or I can choose something different. And so I chose something different. And that's really the choice. Do I want to go get an education? Do I want to study? Do I want to work? Do I want to improve myself instead of watching television? That's a choice we all make, right? The average American watches 120 hours of television a month. That's a full-time job. So I chose not to do those kinds of things. I got into some things like video games and stuff like that. I was a gamer for a while. But I still invested in myself. And that's where you're going to get a great value of return. And that's a choice. Do I want to sit on the couch and watch TV, or, you know, fill in the blanks, you know, golfers, guys going golfing, just name it. Or do I want to invest in myself and improve my stature and my value and finances and my knowledge? Because you don't become a financial genius overnight. You have to stick with it for a while and study. So that's a choice. And so I could have continued just like my parents had. But my choice was different. And I said, and I teach this in my book as well, is if you want to get better with money, you have to get money smart. And so we spend 12 years going to school learning about math, English, and science, but we don't spend any time learning about money. So how do we expect to be good with money if we don't spend time learning about money? Mm. And so, and that's, it's a very simple principle, but it's just so, there's so much truth in it. We spend time, just name anything any American, spends time on that, when you look at it, does it really provide any value for your future? There's just so much time wasted. And then you go, okay, am I making a choice that provides value for my future? And that's really another choice that you have to make. So that's the whole purpose of it. The privilege thing is a very interesting thing. You know, I have seen some bad environments, but there are just so many people that have come out of those same environments and just found success. Here, I got a book on my desk. Actually, I'll pull it up real quick. I just met this guy like 2 weeks ago. Robert Sherrill. Robert Sherrill was a drug dealer. He spent his life incarcerated. Okay. He got arrested by the FBI and put away for a long time. Mm. He got out of prison like 7 years ago. And he now has a business with 8 houses.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so this man, I heard his life story. I'm like, how do you go from like being a cocaine dealer, tracked down by the FBI and put in prison for a long time, and then come out 7 years later and put together a wealth empire, and he's still young, get started. I think he's 35 years old. Mm-hmm. That guy, he had the cards stacked against him. His mom, he talked about his mom being a cocaine user. His dad passed away. His dad died in prison, actually. And, but yet there he is, and he made a different choice. He followed in the path that he grew up in until he made a different choice. So sorry, I'm on a little bit of a soapbox there, but I just think there's a lot of inspiration. And I think a lot of times we can make excuses for ourselves when we need to stop that and actually realize that we can make a choice for a better future. So that's what I'm trying to encourage people to do.
Got it. And so you've spoken on some factors outside of money that people need to consider if they're trying to become millionaires. So what are they and how did you come up with them?
Yeah, so I would say, even though my parents didn't teach me about money, they did teach me about life. And so my parents had an extremely strong work ethic. So I don't believe you can build or keep wealth unless you have good, strong character. I only really deal with five character dimensions in my book. That, you know, you could deal with dozens of those, but really integrity, responsibility, work ethic, strong self-discipline and focus. And so all of those affect whether or not you're going to find success in your life. Integrity, you need to be trustworthy for people to be able to do business with you, or for your boss to trust you on your job. So, or even the people in your life. Responsibility, take responsibility for yourself and things you're doing. Work ethic, obviously you need to show up. In a culture where people are trying to dodge work a lot of times, you need to show up when you're supposed to be there and be dependable. Just, it's crazy how much attention you'll get if you just get to work early and stay a little bit late and get things done you're supposed to do, and how much prosperity just, I think, flows to people that are like that. Yeah, and then the other two, self-discipline, you know, we talked about the television thing. Just not, you know, wasting your time. And then focus on the things that really matter. So those are the big ones. Time management's a big one. Something I didn't do that I did add to my book because it came in later in life. I really didn't have what I would call a mentor as a young guy. I'm kind of like a loner and trying to figure out things myself. And I still have a part of that is part of me and who I am. And I have to really break it. And I've had some people call me out on it a little bit. Like, do you have somebody speaking into your life about these things? And I'm like, you know what? I don't. I need to find somebody. And so that's where I talk about finding a money mentor. A lot of times you really need, whether it's life, you know, money, marriage, parenting, whatever the topic is, you need to find somebody that's smarter or more established or successful in an area than you are. And so, you know, don't go get money advice from a broke person. You know, people that are in your neighborhood. Like, I could not go get money advice from my parents. That would have been the wrong thing to do. So I needed to go find it for myself. But even better than that, I would have found somebody that actually was good with money and asked them questions and learned from them. And that's what I call a money mentor. But you could say mentor. It doesn't have to be with money. It could be, you know, marriage. You know, a lot of marriages are breaking up today, but, you know, you need to have somebody in your life that can actually help you with these difficult things of life versus trying to figure it out on your own or going to somebody who's going to give you bad advice. Time would be a big one. We waste so much time, but we need to learn to maximize our time. That's what I call millionaire key number three, I think it is. Two. Millionaire key number two. is maximize your time. Just get the most out of it. We all have the same amount of time, but what differentiates us is what we do with it. You know, some people waste it. Some people maximize it, and they're the ones that actually get ahead.
Can I ask a question? There is actually from an earlier comment you made, but I think it actually ties really well to that principle, if you will. And you actually said it about your parents, and I think you've hit it a number of times. I think this is why it's going to be presently and possibly in the past and maybe in the future, it's confusing to people. So they see their parents work hard. You said your parents had great work ethic, then that's something they taught you. People see themselves work hard. They see their grandmother work hard, and yet they are still not building wealth. What breaks out of that cycle between just having good work ethic? You work hard, you work 40 hours, you work 60 hours, but yet 60 years later, you're not wealthy. What's the difference maker there?
I think there's two things that play into that. I'll approach the one that is more direct and present in everybody's is you need to have knowledge about what you're doing, like what you're managing. And I think that is the biggest trap, right? So we fall into the same cycles and repeat the same cycles of those that came before us. So if our parents were bad with money, we repeat that cycle. It's why you see people kind of a lot of times following the same job footsteps that their parents do. You know, this is the expertise. Now that's changing a little bit more these days with the culture, but for years that was the kind of continuing thing. It's more like rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, do the same things over. I could have become a carpenter like my dad. I love woodworking, but I wasn't as stoked about that as I was working on cars and math. And so I went and studied engineering. And it probably helped that my mom told me that if I came home, I'd pay $800 a month in rent. Because I tried to quit college at one point because I just wanted a break. And she convinced me not to do that because she was going to charge me too much. Yeah, that was her incentive program. But yeah, so back to your question, that cycle. And it's that cycle that we got to break it. So, you know, I think the awakening comes, you've got to want something different. So if you're going to keep repeating that cycle until something intersects with you that you say, I don't want to repeat this. Like, I don't want to go another year doing it this way. What can I do differently? And then you try to break out of it. And some people break out of it and some people don't. Some people fall back into it. I think the way you break out of it is you have to get new information. If you try to break out of that cycle and you don't get new information or interject new information, it's going to be extremely difficult. So for me, it was educating myself around money and what I called getting money smart, millionaire key number three. The next step to that would be find somebody that can help you break out of it, which would be some, you know, millionaire key number four, which is find a money mentor. So somebody that you're going to let speak into your life that is going to be smarter about money than you. And it's, you know, it could be any number of people, and you could trade those people out over time. Like, you might, you know, find just an uncle who's doing a little bit better with his cash than say your mom and dad are. But look, constantly looking for those people that can help pull you up. And so there's an old kind of wise thing out there. It talks about, and they say it in like several different ways. So I'll say it in several different ways as well. Your income is the average of the five closest friends that you have. Okay. So when you look around, you go, what are these guys making money? Well, if they're all working, you know, I hate to say it this way, but, you know, 15-hour jobs, and you're in your 30s, $15 an hour jobs, then you're going to fall into that same circle. So whereas if you look around at the guys that are, you know, bankers or whatever, and they're making, you know, a couple $100,000 a year or whatever, well, their friends are all the bankers, and they all kind of, you know, moved into that space together. The same thing could be said about character. You're an average of the people that you spend the most time with. And so if you want to change your lifestyle, your situation, you need to find different people to spend time with that are going to pull you up instead of keep you where you are. So I hope that helps and makes some sense. I'll be interested to see what you guys, if you guys agree with that or not.
Yeah, I believe there's some truth to that. I'm thinking about the people who I associate with now, and they're all people who I went to college with at this point. We don't talk about what each other makes, though. We've had that conversation on the show before around people actually having the conversation with friends about what they actually make, and how that may even be more taboo than talking about kind of personal finances in general. So, Marcus, I don't know if you feel differently.
I agree. And I'm actually, you know, like we do, and I'm looking up into the left and reflecting. I stroke my beard if I had it grew out this month. And I'd say that's true. My circle now talks more about money, namely because I wrote a book and they know I got a podcast. So it's kind of hard to avoid those money discussions. But yeah, I don't know what they make. I might know what a few make, and a few of them I could probably look up because, like you said, most of us either work in government or public sector or something to that effect. So that actually is interesting that we kind of just either, you know, I guess that could be a nature or nurture debate about how we all had some similar line of work. But I do agree, and we've talked about this a lot. For me, breaking the cycles, and I'm like you, I'm actually pretty stubborn. So I did it in the inverse. I got out of debt, and then I read all the books because I was too stubborn to read. I'm like, I'm going to do this on my own, you know? And then I guess as far as now, that financial learning, like even when I was going through that, more so reflective in my career, my mentors, one formally, but others just naturally, have been like groundbreaking. And I didn't really realize that, you know, like most people, I'm egocentric. I think my experience is everybody's experience until I reflected back and I talked to people. I'm like, hey, well, why don't you go talk to your mentor about this? They're like, what the hell are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, everybody doesn't have 3, 4, 5, 6 mentors that they can go and reflect to. It's actually interesting you say like, that's why I was looking up to the left. I was like, huh, I don't have a money mentor. I'm reading a lot and I'm learning a lot, but I don't have someone that I go to for money discussion. But I have professional mentors. I have spiritual, you know, reflective people that just help me grow as a person. I disclose that I'm also going to start looking into mental health and, like, you know, getting somebody to help me with there, which is the thing I've been the most stubborn about. But I think it's rounding out your circle. I agree with you. Those five or whatever the number that you want to use, people that surround you also define you.
Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to one of your other podcasts previously, and I commend you for reaching out and getting the mental kind of side of things. Just being real transparent with you guys. My wife and I went through a hard time here these last 3 years, but really 20 years of hard marriage. And it's just very interesting because you don't realize you're in the middle of like a struggling situation, but you are at times. And so I've been actually seeing a therapist now for the last year, and I'm like, man, if I would have seen this guy 15 years ago, like life would have been so much better.
Yeah.
And it, Yeah. And it's like, wow, like, should everybody see a therapist? Because I think about, like, people in my family, like, you could benefit from one. You could benefit from one, you know. And we just don't think about it, like, being vulnerable like that is, I think, the real reason. Is we just don't realize the baggage that we brought up with us from our childhood and how much it really affects us. And that's what my journey's been the last year. It's just having, you know, the covers pulled back on, you know, your previous 40 years of your life. And you're like, wow, all these different things affected me this way and caused me to make these kinds of decisions.
Yeah, it's good to hear you say that. I think with the episode that you might have listened to, I think I might have talked about therapy up front, where it's something I've been doing for a couple of years. And I had that same, if I had only, but of course, as we know, hindsight is 20/20. Do you think having a therapist would have impacted? So if you did have one years back, looking retrospectively, I think that's the right word. If you did have a therapist years back, do you think that that would have led to any different financial decisions?
Yeah, I think quite a few, without going into a lot of detail. The money mentor would have also led into some different financial decisions. Like, I've made good decisions with my money overall, but I still could look back and go, you know, again, I was a bit of a loner, so I was kind of making good decisions on my own. But as I started looking back through some of those decisions, I'm like, I missed something there. And when you look at the time value of money and how it compounds, that small decision there that I made is actually a $500,000 decision when I'm 65 years old. Mm. And so because of that time, the good decisions you make compound in a positive way, but the bad decisions you make compound in a negative way, and it results in lost money and opportunity. So for me, I made some investment decisions that on the surface looked really good. And this is even inside of my 401k, where you're supposed to have a financial advisor advising you, and they did. And I just didn't go back and kind of screen it. And they don't screen them. You know, honestly, financial advisors, once you get your 401k, it's fire and forget. They don't look at what you're doing. And so I went back, reviewed a couple of my investments, and I had two that were doing really good and two that were performing at half of what the other two had done. And so by the time you compounded that out, you know, for me, it was, I guess, 30 years or so. It's like, wow, that's a lot of money. That's $500,000. And this 401k advisor really didn't help me in that situation. So that's where I talk about a money mentor and doing financial audits and things like that. But you said decisions on your money. Yeah. If I'd had somebody in that space, I would have made different decisions. If I had my therapist, I would have made different decisions around my marriage and my money. We've been married, my wife and I have been married 20 years, but I've probably given her maybe two good years, you know, just being real transparent. And we've got six kids. And I wouldn't have said that when I was in the middle of it. You know, I would have said things were okay. But looking back now that I've gone through all this therapist stuff, I'm like, wow, I did a lot of hurtful things and she stuck it out with me. So. But now I'm making it up to her. So hopefully, you know, these next 20 years will be, she'll forget about the first 20.
Yeah. As an unmarried man, but knowing the era that we're in, I would not try to impress her with another vacuum cleaner, though.
Yeah. I don't know. Man, I got to look it up. I got this new vacuum. It's like the most impressive adult decision I made. I'm going to go find it. Is it a Dyson? Yes, there we go. Yes, I was so proud of that Dyson decision. I paid cash. I didn't finance it.
Dyson makes a good vacuum. Cheaper, too.
Yeah. I have a Dyson iron that I rarely use, and I've looked at a vacuum cleaner. My girl has been trying to convince me to get one, and I almost did it, but I'm going to hold off. And so she's probably going to hear this, then start convincing me again.
Well, you need to wait till you get married and give it to her for Christmas. Yeah. That's a great move.
look, Dyson has an advocate in me, man. You know, I'm not even getting paid to say this. They don't have to pay me. No affiliate links. Buy a Dyson.
Well, Tony, it has been awesome having you on the podcast. Appreciate your level of transparency, dropping some knowledge for the folks out there. So where can people learn more about you and get the book?
Yeah, so you can pick up the book at any major bookseller, Target or Barnes & Noble, any of those guys. Amazon has it, of course. It's The Millionaire Choice. And you can also find out more information at themillionairechoice.com and on the book and what we're doing financially. You're really getting into a lot of financial education stuff right now. I'm working with some local schools trying to do some beta testing on some financial literacy stuff and in the fall. And so that's exciting. And I post all those updates up to the Millionaire Choice. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, again, Tony, it's been awesome having you on the podcast, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoy it. You guys are quite entertaining, to say the least.
We try. Thanks again to Tony for joining us. Really appreciated his transparency. Matt, I did not know about the Kirby vacuum.
Well, now you know about the Dyson. That's all that really matters. Yeah, good episode. A lot of good information. I hope y'all got some shout out to Rianca financial nuggets from this one as well.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars at Apple Podcasts and say a few words about the show. Today's review of the week comes from A.Z. Summers.
I'm feeling the name. Relatable Personal Finance, 5 stars. I love this podcast. Marcus and Rich make the material not only easy to understand, but relatable and practical. Interesting guests and engaging interviews like the one today. I've learned so much since finding this podcast via Bad With Money. Shout out to Gabby Dunn. And I'm ready to get my financial path set right, not just my own future. That was me struggling to read. There was no periods or strange text there. I don't know what I'm going through over here. But that of my family as well. Keep it up, guys. Can't wait to hear more. Thumbs up.
Appreciate those 5 stars, AZ Summers. I'm feeling the name too. That it seems kind of hip hop-ish.
I now can't think of the reference that it's reminding me of, but shout out to AZ. You hit all the notables and the quotables.
Indeed.
And if you'd like to find us on social, we're on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You can follow our individual accounts. Find me at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter, 2 T's everywhere else, because that is my government name. Rich is all over the web at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And once again, as we mentioned up top, don't forget to purchase the debt-free course, a 4-step plan to your debt freedom, by visiting paybal.co/debt. Again, that's paybal.co/debt.
Cop that course. Thanks so much to everyone for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.